You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Our guest at this time is Bruce Feiler, New York Times columnist, PBS host, and author of The First Love Story, Adam, Eve, and Us. Since antiquity, Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden have been misunderstood, according to our guest, Bruce Feiler. History has blamed them for bringing sin, deceit, and death into the world when we should have been celebrating them for their resilience, their give and take, their shared identity, and their enduring commitment to each other. Good morning, Bruce Feiler.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Well, why has there been this misconception for 4,000 years over four continents?
Well, I think that the truth is we've been struggling with how men and women relate to each other. That's really what began this journey for me. I have a working wife. I have adolescent daughters, and we spend a lot of time talking about how men and women relate to each other, and we're struggling to find the balance ourselves. And you know, a few years ago, we were in the Sistine Chapel in Rome, as you know, and look up at these images of Adam and Eve, and I realized, oh my gosh, this story has been at the heart of every conversation about this for all these years, and maybe there's a lesson here. It's kind of crazy as it seems. And so I got to go on, I think of it as this great scavenger hunt from the Garden of Eden in Iraq to Jerusalem to Rome to London to Hollywood, trying to figure out what the first relationship can tell us. And what I really discovered was, if you go back to the story, as you were saying, there is this give and take, this back and forth, this resilience. You know, they have missteps, they have sin, but then they manage to recover and they stay together. There's a lot in there. But what happens, I think this is really the answer to your question, is that organized religion gets a hold of the story, and by organized religion, of course, I mean men, and they basically weaponize the story as a way to elevate men and keep women down. And that's how it was for centuries, really, until, you know, contemporary times, when men and women have been rewriting the story of the family, of everything, and what happened essentially is people gone back to the story and beginning to discover a new message in it.
Well, you note that Mark Twain once made a journey and saw a statue of Adam back in the year of 1867, and it moved him immensely.
Well, I find this story, it's funny, I have to say, you know, a lot of places I've been going, I've been doing a lot of interviews. I was at the PBS NewsHour recently, and the guy was saying, oh, I was kept waiting for when you were going to talk about Mark Twain, and as you know, I really put it at the very end of the book. So Twain goes to Jerusalem. He discovers, like, this connection to Adam. He's a bit of a cynic, of course. He gets incredibly emotional. He comes back. He actually recommends that the people, the organizers building the Statue of Liberty, replace the woman with a statue to Adam. I'm like, it becomes his cause. And he writes four or five books about Adam and Eve. They're kind of not known today, but they're so beautiful. I mean, he actually has Adam say, you know, wherever Eve, wherever you were, there was Eden. I mean, that's like one of the most romantic things ever written about her. And that's really what happened. You know, while religion kind of tended to dump on this story, you know, this rival, this kind of counter-narrative of artists, Michelangelo in the Sistine Chapel making Eve the center of the chapel, or Milton in Paradise Lost, Mark Twain, Mary Shelley in Frankenstein, and Hemingway, these people kind of reimagine the story and allow us to see it as something different and ultimately to see it as a love story.
Now, you have consulted with historians, archaeologists, Vatican guides, psychotherapists. What have you come away with in your perception now as opposed to what you believed before you began this project, Bruce?
Well, let's just talk about the first two you mentioned, archaeologists and therapists, right? In the modern psychology, like the happiness movement, what have we learned? Relationships are important to happiness. Happiness is other people in a lot of ways. And what's the biggest threat to that? The answer is loneliness, right? So what's the first thing God says about humans in the Bible? It's not right for humans to be alone. Like, the Bible gets there 3,000 years before social science. And so what I feel, the first thing I feel is that this idea that science has rendered the Bible, you know, irrelevant, that's just not true. There's so many insights. And even the idea that the Bible has everything and who needs science, also not true. But when you put the present in dialogue with the past, like, the insights you get are really electrifying, I would say. And so that's the first thing I learned, is that it can teach us something. And I would say the other big lesson, you know, is that it's the power of resilience. Adam and Eve start together, they separate, they get kicked out of Eden, they come together and have children. One of those children, Cain, murders the other. Adam and Eve forgive each other, get over their, you know, their pain, and have another child in Seth. That's what allows the story to be a success. He populates the human line. So what do the psychologists tell us? That you got to be able to mend a broken heart. You got to be able to overcome a rupture or a break. And the fact that they did this, and because they didn't have couples therapists, you know, is really remarkable. It's very contemporary.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mentioned the four continents. You traveled near and far to get more information, including going to the Garden of Eden in Iraq. How was that experience?
Well, I think it tells us a lot about the Bible. I believe if you go, you know, to the places themselves, the insights will really emerge. And, you know, the opening verses of Genesis talk about land emerging out of a watery chaos. And you go down there in southern Iraq where the Tigris and Euphrates come together. It's very marshy. It's very watery. You know, it's like not unlike southern Louisiana, right? And that sense of land emerging out of a watery chaos, you can understand that the Bible wants us to think that these stories were taking place around here. And so, again, it's a way to connect and you know, and deepen our connection to the story. Traveling to the places it can give us a lot of insight.
The book is The First Love Story, Adam, Eve, and Us, from Bruce Feiler, New York Times columnist, PBS host, and author of this remarkable book. He writes the This Life column for the Sunday New York Times and is the author of six consecutive bestsellers. Now, you even went to Hollywood.
Oh, I love this story. So basically, this story's been around for 30 centuries, and for 28 of them, men were the only people to talk about it. And when women started to talk about the story in public, you know, you begins to change. So Elizabeth Cady Stanton, the origin of the women's rights movement, she tackles this story in the Woman's Bible and points out the equality of men and women. She gets booted out of the movement. She's one of the most famous women of the 1890s. Well, the most famous woman, or one of the most famous women of the 1930s, was Mae West. And I went to Hollywood, you know, got to stick my hand in her corset, I'll confess. And she, in 1937, plays Eve in a skit. Donna Meachie plays Adam. Mae West plays Eve. Charlie McCarthy, the ventriloquist dummy, he plays the snake. And she, of course, you know, she sexes it all up. Oh, are you happy to see me? Or is that a wooden nose? I mean, you kind of can't believe it. And she says, oh, you know what? I'm bored. I want to go eat the fruit. And she eats the fruit, and she gives it to Adam. And she's like, oh, look, I made history. Yeah, I got the first original kiss. What happens next is kind of entirely predictable in some ways now, but at the time was shocking. There's a huge letter-writing campaign. People write the White House and Congress and NBC who broadcast it. And Mae West, the most famous actress in Hollywood, is banned from radio for life. Like, that's how attached people are to the kind of, you know, traditional reading of the story. It's not really until the feminist movement, really, in the 60s and 70s, where women are starting to say, you know what, we're going to stand equal before God, or we're going to be out of here, that basically Adam and Eve get rewritten.
You've alluded to this, Bruce, but you believe that Adam and Eve can teach us today about love. How so?
First of all, a re-equalized Adam and Eve have a lot to teach us. So I'll just tick off a couple of examples. Number one, resilience, right? The power to mend ruptures and to keep going, right? Love is not a choice we make once. The Hollywood version, like, you choose to be in love and you live happily ever after. Like, anybody in a relationship knows that lasts 3 months. It's a choice you have to make over and over again, and Adam and Eve really teach us that. So that's one, resilience, you know, kind of stick-to-itiveness. A second, I would say, is the balance between being independent and interdependent. You got to be yourself, but you got to be with your partner, right? We need equilibrium in relationships. You take this, I'll take that. You take the lead in this, I'll take the lead in that. It certainly happens with Adam and Eve, still happens today. But really what happened to me in working on The First Love Story is I went in to write a book about Adam and Eve, and I ended up writing a book about love. And the number one thing I learned is that love is a story you tell with another person. It's co-creation through co-narration, and that really is the key. You know, you've got one God in the story. He creates two human beings. They got to figure out a way to work it out, even through the good times and the bad times. And that's what's important about Adam and Eve. Think of all the other people in the Bible, and I've devoted a fair bit of my life to the Bible. Abraham, Moses, David, Jesus, they're all singles. Adam and Eve are a couple. They're the first we, the first to understand that you got to work it out together, especially when you hit a rough patch. And that's the powerful lesson that they hold for us. Keep going, keep talking, keep telling your own story.
What did they likely look like?
That's a really interesting question. You know, it's so interesting. You imagine on many paintings and sculptures and whatever of Adam and Eve. And here's what I've concluded. They look like whoever is making them. sort of like we see in them. I mean, the Bible, there's so many powerful emotions in the story, but frankly, no description of what they look like. For the record, Adam looks at Eve and says, oh, you're the one. Like, he's very happy. Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. Hello, he's quite aroused. Like, the two are naked and no shame. So he's kind of a guy. It's all about the looks. And she's like, you know, I want more. I want emotion. I want connection. I want intimacy. So, I have no idea what they look like, but my guess is they look like what people want them to look like.
Well, it's a fascinating book and an important one, The First Love Story, Adam, Eve, and Us from Bruce Feiler, and it's been a pleasure to talk with you today. Thanks for joining us, Bruce.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you so much, and come on this journey, folks. I think you'll be uplifted.